Quentin. When Tricia finished talking with Lori, the rain had returned with a vengeance. She drove into town, stopping across from the courthouse to call Glenn and tell him not to wait up for her. She wasn't sure when or if she would make it home that evening. From there, she drove to the Hillsborough Havens nursing home out on the northern edge of town, just past the fast food joints. She thought about stopping to get a bite, but decided against it. She didn't expect to take more than 15 minutes to confirm Quentin Russell's identity. Tricia pulled her car into the parking lot of the nursing home. There was something dark and foreboding about the place. "You don't need to come here," the building seemed to tell her. "Go back home. Leave us alone."
"You can't park there."
An older man with a walker dressed only in a hospital gown came out of the front door to confront her.
"You can't park there," he scolded. "It says employees only. Can't you read?"
The man turned to point out a sign marked "Visitor Parking." A gust of wind exposed the man's bare bottom. An orderly came out to escort the man back inside. Tricia tried to get out of her car and up to the front door of the facility before the orderly shut the door in her face. She was too late. Tricia counted to 10 before attempting to work the keypad underneath the instructions telling visitors the combination which would let them in. After working in vain to punch the correct combination, she simply tried the door. The door opened. No wonder the man in the hospital gown managed to get out to meet her. "Can I help you?" A woman of about 50 sitting in a small office off the foyer tried to get Tricia's attention. "Visiting hours end in 15 minutes unless you're family. Are you family, Miss Michaels?" Tricia answered. "There's no one here by that name, so you aren't family," the woman in the office barked. "I'm here to see a patient by the name of Quentin Russell. Would that patient be available?" The woman in the office pretended not to hear Tricia's request. "Ma'am, I'm looking for a patient of yours by the name of Quentin Russell. Would he be available this evening?" The woman in the office persisted in ignoring Tricia. "Quentin, Quinton, Russell, Russell. "There's no one here by that name, no matter how many times you repeat it," the woman told her. "Go away. You're not a visitor. You have no family. Here, you're not wanted." Before Tricia could respond, her hand was pinned behind her back and she was forcibly directed toward the door. "No need to take her outside, Willie. The police will be here in just a couple of minutes." Another woman came up behind Tricia. Willie let her go after swinging her around to face the new arrival. "You're looking for someone who's not here, Miss Michaels," the new woman told her. "No one by that name exists. He's a figment of the imagination." "How do you know who I am?" Tricia demanded. "I had a call this afternoon from a concerned citizen telling me that you might be coming here this evening on some sort of a wild goose chase," the woman barked back. "There is no such person as this Quentin Russell you're talking about. Never has been, never will be, at least around here." Willie relaxed his grip on Tricia. She turned around to face the woman who denied the existence of the man she was looking for. The woman appeared to be relatively young. To Tricia, she seemed to bear a similarity to some of the other people she'd met recently. "Maybe it's all in my mind," she thought. "If you wish to come here to inspect this facility, Miss Michaels, you need to do so during the day and with a court order. As for your attempted intrusion this evening, well, as far as I'm concerned, you are trespassing." Before anything else could be said, a uniformed policeman came in through the front door and into the foyer. "Evening, Miss Loomis," he said, addressing the woman standing almost toe-to-toe with Tricia. "Is there a problem here?" "This woman is trespassing. I want her off the premises and held until tomorrow morning when I can press charges." "Do you really want me to go to all that trouble?" the officer asked. "Yes, I really want you to go to all that trouble," Miss Loomis replied. The officer shook his head and sighed. Tricia followed the officer's instructions and opened her jacket to show him that she wasn't armed. He led her outside, his gun drawn, obviously as a show for staff of the nursing home. "Do you want me to follow you, or do you want me to go out to the station in back of your, or go to the station in the back of your car?" she asked once they were inside. They expect me to haul you off to the Hooskow, the policeman answered. I've been through the drill with Marilyn Loomis before. If you give me your keys when we get to the station, I'll send someone to pick up your car. Thanks, Tricia smiled. I need the tote in the front seat. My laptop is in there. I'd hate to lose it. She went ahead and got into the back seat of the patrol car. She found it to be much warmer and more inviting than the nursing home. I'm Mike. Mike Vincent, the officer told her when she was belted in. I'm sorry to have to do this, but the crazies insisted that I come and arrest you. Nothing personal, you understand. I understand, Mike. The drive to the police station was quiet and short. Mike was polite, opening doors, smiling, and exhibiting his best manners. Instead of taking her to a holding cell, Mike sat Tricia down next to a desk to make her feel more comfortable. You're Tricia Knox. I've seen your face in your byline a few times, Mike commented once they arrived at the police station. Haven't seen any stories from you since the one you did about Zeke Collins and meeting some man out of Texas who replaced him. Have you retired? Well, truth is, I married the Texan and adopted his name. Still riding. The byline is different, but I'm still riding. Well, that would explain it then, Mike bubbled. Are you researching a story now? Yes, I am. You're trying to expose local nursing homes? Truth is that the Havens is a well-run facility. It's very private, too. Miss Loomis makes sure of that. Well, I was actually hoping to find a patient I was told about, she told him. All I need to do is to confirm the existence of someone named Quentin Russell. He's supposed to be living at that home. If you'd call that living, Mike told her. Most of the patients are the elderly who suffer from dementia. Most people don't want it to be known that there's a funny uncle or a crazy grandpa living out their last days in a place like that. Well, I'm told that Quentin Russell is in the last final stages of Alzheimer's, Tricia stated. What I'm trying to do is confirm what I've heard. Well, if he's in there, and if he's in the condition you say he's in, he can't be doing much harm where he is, right? Well, his current state of mind isn't preventing someone from using his name to intimidate others, Tricia pointed out. There's a woman over in Fuller County who was threatened by someone invoking Quentin Russell's name within the last week and a half. It's mighty long reach for someone who can't feed himself. It's mighty long reach for anyone at least 20 years past their prime, even in perfect health. Another policeman came into the office where Mike and Tricia were talking. Mike asked him to find someone to go and recover Tricia's car from the nursing home. After the second policeman left, Mike offered Tricia a cup of coffee. You haven't booked me yet, Tricia noted while Mike was pouring the coffee. Don't see any need to, Mike replied. In fact, as soon as Herschel brings back your car, you're free to go. What about the trespassing charge? If Loomis makes any noises, I'll claim that you escaped, Mike laughed. Chances are that Marilyn Loomis won't even bother to come down to press charges in the morning anyway. We've been down that road before. Believe me, her bark is much worse than her bite. He offered Tricia a cup of coffee while they waited for Herschel to return. When he got back, she had him recover her tote from the front seat so she could use her cell phone to make a few calls. You don't mind, do you? She asked a policeman. Help yourself, he replied. You're entitled to one call just on general principle. Tricia had a couple of quick conversations, first with Glenn, then with Greg Fisher, the family lawyer. Can you recommend a place to stay the night? She asked Mike after she finished with her calls. You want to stay here in town? Mike asked. May as well, she told him. I'm going to see about having the tables turned on Miss Loomis in the Hillsborough Havens nursing home in the morning. Tricia spent a comfortable night at a motel recommended by Mike at the police station. Greg Fisher appeared at her room shortly after 8 the next morning. They shared a light breakfast at a nearby restaurant. At 9, they went to visit Sheriff Hill to request a welfare check on Quentin Russell at the nursing home. Quentin Russell? Sheriff Hill asked in response to Tricia's request. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but Quentin Russell in the nursing home isn't the same Quentin Russell you're looking for. I was told by Ray Ball that Quentin Russell had been picked up in Cincinnati a few years back for driving the wrong way on a one-way street, Tricia countered. He was supposedly brought back here to the Havens nursing home to live out what remained of his life. I don't care if he's nothing more than a vegetable these days. I'd like to see him for myself. I have a story I'm working on which involves him. Sheriff Hill relented and obtained a court order. Shortly after 10:30, when Tricia, Sheriff Hill, Greg Fisher, and a small cadre of deputies drove to the nursing home to find the elusive Quentin Russell. When they arrived, Miss Loomis stood in the doorway of the facility blocking the entrance until the sheriff showed her the order he had obtained. She relented and led them to an empty room. "Where is he?" the sheriff demanded. "He's not here," Miss Loomis informed him. Sheriff Hill dispersed his deputies, ordered them to confirm the identity of everyone in the building while he waited in the empty room. While they waited, the sheriff requested access to patient logs for the previous 18 months. Miss Loomis asked to contact her attorney before surrendering the logs. "It's not an unreasonable request," Sheriff Hill responded. "The fact of the matter is that all we need to know is whether or not Quentin Russell is here or ever was here. Just tell us truthfully, and there'll be no need for any further fuss." "He's dead," Miss Loomis mumbled after considering what the sheriff told her. Her eyes were on the floor. "He's been dead for nearly 6 months." "Where's the body?" "His family claimed the body and took it to be cremated. That's all I know about it." Sheriff Hill turned to Tricia. "Hope you're satisfied." "Just barely," she answered. "Do you still have patient records on Mr. Russell?" she asked Miss Loomis. "Patient records are not public record," the administrator reminded the writer. "Death notices are," Tricia reminded her. "You can find death notices just as easily at the newspaper office." "If you don't mind," Miss Loomis said, turning to the sheriff, "I'd appreciate it if you would move this circus out of my place of business and take your monkey with you." Tricia left with the sheriff, insulted and embarrassed at the turn of events. I told you that the person we were looking for was not living here in Highland County," Sheriff Hill reminded Tricia when they returned to his office. "For what you cost us in manpower this morning, I ought to lock you up until you make arrangements to pay back the taxpayers for your bit of investigative reporting." Sheriff Hill continued to have his say for a solid 15 minutes before releasing Tricia from his presence, admonishing her not to cast a shadow in his doorway ever again. "I think he knows where Quentin Russell is," Tricia told Greg when they stopped at a diner for lunch. "If he doesn't know exactly, he at least knows that he's still alive." "What makes you think that?" Greg asked. "Writer's instinct, for one." "Instinct is animal behavior." "Okay, I'll call it a hunch. If the real Quentin Russell was the man in the nursing home, Sheriff Hill would have certainly carried through with his threat to throw us in jail. I think that he believes that Quentin is still alive and that I might be able to lead him to him." "That's an interesting thought. Let me ask you something. Do you think that Quentin Russell is real, or is he just a figment of the imagination, a boogeyman invented to scare people?" "I'm starting to think he's a boogeyman," Tricia laughed. "Maybe the old man in the nursing home was there just for show. If word got out that Quentin Russell was dead, the people using his name wouldn't have a scapegoat to fall back on." "Maybe what you need to do is find out more about the guy, the legend, not the man from the nursing home." Greg looked at his watch, swallowed the last little bit of coffee he had in his cup, then excused himself. "Well, I see you back in Glenn's office later this afternoon," he asked. "I'm going to stay put this afternoon and catch up on my writing," Tricia told him. "Glenn's coming over later. We've been invited to attend a square dance with the Jackson group tonight, something called a banner raid. We'll see you tomorrow sometime, maybe." Tricia followed Greg out of the restaurant and headed back to the motel where she stayed the previous night. After renting her room for another day, she pulled out her laptop and the notes she'd been working on to get the day's worth of writing out without interruption. Her plans are spoiled with a knock on her door. Sheriff Hill was outside. Tricia braced for a fight. "You're staying here in town despite my request," he said when she opened the door. "I need to have a private talk with you. Can I come in?" She hesitated a moment or two before agreeing to talk with him outside. "Fair enough," he agreed. Or we could talk in the manager's office. His wife's a second cousin." The manager's office was more appealing than sitting outside in the cold metal furniture made even colder by the lack of sunlight. "I had to tell you to leave," Sheriff Hill told Tricia when they got settled into the small motel office. "It's mostly for show. I have a deputy or two I can't really trust, but at the same time I can't really fire either. It's all because of this Quentin Russell thing. Quentin Russell's been a thorn in the side of the sheriff's office for the better part of 40 years, he continued. A pain in the ass is more accurate. Sorry to put it that way, ma'am, but that's exactly what he's been. Sheriff Hill told her about several incidents involving Quentin Russell dating from the 70s, incidents which included robbery and murder. There were whispers around the county that he was responsible, but no one could ever prove that he was even remotely involved. Sounds a lot like what happened in Fuller County, Tricia stated. If Quentin Russell is alive or not seems to be irrelevant. There appears to have been no shortage of people still willing to do his dirty work for him, or at least in his name. Suppose for a minute that Quentin Russell never went outside of the law in the first place, and that someone or a group of people have been using him all along to try to frame him. Let them take the rap for somebody else's misdeeds. So that when he caught, and if we ever caught up with him, he would end up in prison, Sheriff Hill concluded. Why him, though? Why him and not someone else? It could be that he might have had some way of putting certain people out of business. It's entirely possible that someone was using law enforcement to keep him from just marching up to a courthouse or somewhere and exposing them to a prosecutor. It was always assumed that if we ever ran into Quentin, we were to shoot first and ask questions later, Sheriff Hill told her. It's possible that there was money involved, she continued. Suppose for a moment that someone was generating large amounts of money from their criminal enterprise. Suppose that the real Quentin Russell siphoned off some of that money. They might have had good reason for trying to get even with him. I mean, if you steal from a thief, who's going to call the cops? After having a good laugh, Sheriff Hill spent the next half hour listening to Tricia telling about what she had learned to date regarding the disappearance of Jim and Nadine Brown. There's something tying all of this together, she concluded. I don't know what it is yet, but once we find that connection, I'm going to have one hell of a story. Inside track. Sheriff Hill headed back to his office, promising to go through some of his old files on Quentin Russell over the weekend. She promised to keep the lawman up to date on her findings, adding a suggestion that he coordinate his efforts with Sheriff Roy Ball in Fuller County. Aside from the interruption from Sheriff Hill, Tricia concentrated on her task at hand until she started feeling hungry. As if on cue, Glenn showed up. They had a quick dinner before changing clothes and heading out to the high school for the dance. The gym at Hillsborough High School was buzzing with activity when Tricia and Glenn arrived. When she mentioned that she was from Magnolia, the woman selling tickets smiled. There's a table over yonder, folks from Jackson. Maybe you might want to know one or two of them. The ticket seller pointed out a group of people congregated at a table halfway to the stage where the caller was setting up. At the same time, she figured out where she was being pointed. A man at the table stood up and motioned wildly for her to come over and join them. Mrs. Michaels, Glenn, good to see you, Fred Granger greeted them when they caught up with the group. It's good to see you people here, Tricia responded. Y'all are a sight for sore eyes. Kitty added her greetings while the room was made so that they could sit down. Tricia was pleased to see that Hoke had come with the group. When she settled in, she asked him if he was going to do any of the calling that evening. Well, I don't call all the time, Hoke told her. Sometimes I just go to be with the group and do some dancing myself. The caller for the evening started forming squares. Hoke enlisted Tricia as his partner, leaving Glenn to sit alone at the table. Hoke and Tricia joined a square with three other couples from the Jackson squares. While they were dancing, Tricia thought she spotted Lori Sheldon in another square. After the set, Tricia zeroed in on Lori, wondering if she would say anything to Glenn about her find. Kitty Granger rescued her. Kitty pulled Tricia over to Lori's table, then proceeded to introduce her to the people she knew from Hillsborough, including Lori and her husband Arnie. Looks like we know someone in common, Lori remarked once Tricia was introduced. This isn't going to be awkward, is it? Tricia asked. Not at all. Me and Arnie talk about what happened yesterday. He says to forgive. I don't have to, but what Arnie says makes sense. Lori took her husband's hand and directed his attention to Tricia. This here's the woman of what came to the shop and said she married Glenn Michaels, Lori told him. That's him sitting at the Jackson table talking with Kitty's husband. She gave a wave to Fred. He waved back, got up and came over to the table, bringing Glenn with him. Before Tricia could give Glenn any sort of a heads up, Lori got up, strode up to Glenn, and embraced him. He looked at Tricia as if asking some sort of a clue to what was going on. "You're the only person to ever give my sister the love she deserved," Lori told Glenn with tears in her eyes. "I spent the better part of my life blaming you for what happened to her. Arnie says I was wrong in doing it. I forgive you." The scene is dissolved into a group hug, followed by an animated retelling of the story about how Lori's sister and Glenn's involvement with her. Eventually, the caller signaled the start of the second set. Well into the set, Tricia noted that Hoke was nowhere to be found. He eventually appeared during the last dance of the second set, his cheeks ruddy. He had obviously been outside. He hadn't been smoking. If he had, she would have noticed the stench of stale tobacco smoke coming from his body when she sat down next to him. "Where'd you disappear?" she asked. "Took a walk," Hoke answered. "I was getting restless inside." "I might have liked that," Tricia told him. I've been too busy these last few days to take a rest." "You have relatives in the area?" "No, I have business here with the sheriff." Hoke quickly changed the subject, leading Tricia to believe that there was something more to Hoke's disappearance than met the eye. Conversation at the Jackson table almost ground to a standstill through most of the break. When the third set started, Fred Granger offered to take Tricia on the dance floor while his wife, Kitty, absconded with Hoke and wound up in a different square. Glenn and Arnie sat out the set, forming a new friendship. "There's something unsettling about Hoke," Fred confided while the squares were still being formed. "When he's calling, he's okay, but when he's dancing, he disappears for at least one set most of the places we go, especially here in Hillsboro." "Do you have any idea where he might be going?" Tricia asked. We tried tailing him once or twice, but we could never catch up with him once we hit the parking lot." "He was gone tonight, you know," she said. "I know. That's why Kitty and me switched partners for this set." The caller started again, ending the conversation for the time being. Between dances, though, Fred fed Tricia little bits of information. When the third set ended, they sat back down as if nothing had been said. When asked, Hoke sheepishly admitted that he had found a way to slip over to visit a homebound cousin of his for a short time during the second set. The evening ended with everyone in a festive mood. The group from Jackson invited Tricia and Glenn to join them for dessert, the local big boy, before heading back home. On the way out of the restaurant, she was pulled aside by someone she thought she might have known but couldn't quite place. "Deputy Ryan, ma'am," he said softly once the others were gone. She recalled that he was one of the deputies involved in the trip to the nursing home earlier in the day. "You realize that one of the men in the group you were talking to was Quentin Russell, Jr., don't you?" "Excuse me?" Tricia was taken back by the revelation. "That single fellow, the man on your left while you were in there, that was Quentin Russell, Jr." "Hoke? You must be joking. He's with a group out of Jackson, the Jackson Squares Dancing Club." "That was Quentin Russell, Jr., all right. He's shown his face around here from time to time. I recognized him when I came in just a little bit ago." "It could be a double or a case of mistaken identity," Tricia postulated. "I doubt it," Deputy Ryan smiled. "Let's talk with the sheriff in the morning. I'll show you some pictures and let you decide." Tricia and Glenn spent a restless night within the motel. She woke up just after 6 by someone banging on her door. When Glenn just rolled over with a sigh, she threw on a bathrobe and found herself facing Sheriff Hill. "Miss Loomis was found dead this morning in the nursing home." Sheriff Hill was direct to the point of being blunt. "One of my deputies found her about 2 hours ago in her office. She had been garroted sometime last night." "Didn't you have someone stationed in the nursing home last night?" Tricia asked. "Deputy Parks. He was a man who found her. Whoever did it was quick, quiet, and professional. Parks said he heard nothing unusual." Tricia shook her head. "One other thing," Sheriff Hill added. Deputy Ryan told me you were seen with Quentin Russell Jr. last night. Your deputy Ryan pulled me aside when we were leaving the big boy after having dessert. He said something to the effect that someone I know is Hoke from down Jackson County is really this Quentin Russell Jr. Are you talking about this man? The sheriff asked, producing a photo. That looks like him, Tricia told the sheriff when she looked at the picture. I only just met him a few weeks back down in Jackson. He's a square dance caller for the Jackson Squares. The group came over to the high school last night and he came with them. I'm fairly certain that Hoke, at least the person I know as Hoke, is who he says he is. Tricia wondered if she was perhaps trying to reassure herself as well as Sheriff Hill. Oh, I believe you, Ms. Michaels, Sheriff Hill smiled. All the same, I'd appreciate your coming to my office before you leave town. I can do that, she told him. Give me an hour. Make that two, would you? Sheriff Hill agreed before going back to his office. Once he was gone, Tricia closed and threw the deadbolt on the door. Glenn, she said, there's trouble, she said, waking him up. There was another murder last night. A woman at the nursing home was garroted, and the sheriff thinks that Hoke did it.